It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Hour number 2 of the Drive underway here on Fan Run Radio. And the Top 4 at 4 brought to you this afternoon by Jet's Pizza in Farragut. Better because it has to be. Marcus Young, better because he has to be. Top 4 at 4. What you got, Marcus?
Thank you, Russell. At number 1, we had the first preseason football game of the NFL season at the 2022 Hall of Fame game between the Raiders and the Jaguars. Las Vegas defeated Jacksonville 27-11. Obviously, with it being preseason, there's not a whole lot of excitement. First overall pick, though, Trayvon Walker got a sack. And the other exciting thing is that, you know, Josh McDaniels gets his offense going as his tenure in Vegas begins. Interesting, though, is that Josh Jacobs had 7 touches of 11 snaps, and it was, he took some hits that kind of felt like, hey, maybe we shouldn't have our starter in this preseason game.
So they were putting him through his paces. Did you watch the game, Marcus?
I did see some of the highlights from it.
Oh. Sounds kind of like you watched.
You know, I like to do my research for the Drive.
Yeah, I mean, at least one of us is prepared and watched the game last night.
I like, especially preseason, I like to watch like some of the highlights because, you know, it's interesting to see the guys out there who are trying to make the team, really doing everything they can to make an impact, to prove they belong. So I kind of enjoy watching that and seeing those guys make those efforts like that. Number 2, the Los Angeles Angels equal dubious MLB milestone with 7 home runs despite their losing the game. They tied a record of 7 solo shots, but still lost to the Athletics 8-7 on Thursday.
That's like Tennessee baseball this past year. Remember how many solo home runs we did? It's like, guys, can we get a walk or something going on here? Get a couple of guys on base.
The Angels are just the second team to hit 7 solo homers and still lose. So
that's crazy.
They're also the first team in the majors to hit 7 solo homers and score no other runs in a game.
That is bizarre, man.
It's always I always find those kind of random like records.
Baseball is the best sport for those things.
It's crazy. Number 3, there is a home and home series that was decided between Kentucky and Gonzaga in men's basketball. What was kind of interesting, though, is that the home and home is not really a home and home, as they will be going to play in Rupp Arena, but they will not be going to the Kennel, because apparently, according to Calipari, anybody that wants to see us play in a 6,000-seat facility wants us to lose. So instead, they are going to be playing, at a neutral, the Spokane Arena, which will hold 12,000 seats instead of Gonzaga's home.
I saw this story earlier in the week. I mean, just the arrogance and entitlement mentality that guy has. It's like, yeah, you're playing Gonzaga. They've earned the right to play you. These Kentucky fans, man, they think they invented the sport. They invented cheating in the sport. They were throwing games back in the day. They had their program shut down for an entire year. They've been on probation more than anybody else in the history of organized athletics. But they haven't won an NCAA tournament game since Grant Williams, who's on his second pro contract, mind you, was playing college basketball for Tennessee. And they want to act like they're in some sort of position to dictate terms. I'm like, I'm sorry, was Gonzaga not in the Final Four? Or they playing for a national championship the year before, this past season? Like, you should be asking them to play. They've been the better program the past 5 years. And we're Kentucky. We don't play in 6,000 seat gyms. Dude, GTFO, you suck.
Completely agree.
100%.
And finally, number 4, Michigan's ice hockey coach, Mel Pearson, was actually ousted and fired today as following the investigation and some misconduct as the coach over there.
Yeah, they have a little Title IX situation.
Well, apparently there's multiple things that Pearson was accused of doing, including telling his players to falsify contact tracing information when it came to COVID-19.
That's not good.
misled recruits about how much scholarship money they would receive.
Oh, man.
Berating and belittling not only the players but staff, and also not properly addressing accusations of improper treatment of female employees. So he kind of hit the bingo card there of things not to do as a coach for any sport.
Yeah, not exactly running a airtight operation there, is it?
Does not seem like it. So the ice hockey team up in Michigan will be looking for a new coach.
Yeah. There you go, Bear. Put your resume in.
I'll do that.
All right, thank you, Marcus. That is the Top 4 at 4 brought to you by Jets Pizza in Farragut, 11124 Kingston Pike. And if you've never been to Jets Pizza, you got to go check it out, man. It's just a really cool place. Now, you can do it the old-fashioned way and call ahead, get it delivered. Their number is 865-675-0505. Let them know we sent you. But if you're looking for a place to just go hang out, watch a ball game, or you want to go out for a little family dinner with the kids, they've got this huge place over there in the corner next to the Shrimp Dock right here, Kingston Pike and Farragut. And you walk in, and on the left side of the building, it's a big open space with big tables and booths and round tables and stuff like that, TVs on the wall and everything, where you can go with the wife and kids and have a nice family dinner out. And who doesn't like pizza, right? On the other side, the right side of the building, they got a bar, a sports bar. And the two places are separate, so if you want to go to the bar and you don't want a bunch of kids running around, you got that going for it. If you want to go to the family restaurant and you don't want a bunch of, you know, bar flies making jokes like Bear and his buddies, then you got that going for you as well. Go over there, check it out. Tell them Fan Run sent you. Jets Pizza in Farragut. Pizza any way you want it. We love the Detroit style deep dish, but they've also got New York style round, hand tossed, thin crust, even got a seasoned cauliflower and gluten free crust. For those of you watching your girlish figures, all kinds of bread, deep dish bread, turbo sticks, cheesy bread, wings, desserts, salads, sandwiches. So good. Jets Pizza, longtime supporter of all things Fan Run, the Farragut location. Check them out. 11124 Kingston Pike in Farragut. Coming up this hour, we've got our buddy Lucas Panzica from 104.5 The Zone scheduled to join us here in a couple minutes, about 10, 15 minutes. So if you want to jump in, now's a great time to take a shot. 865-546-8200 is your number to get on board. A couple open lines if you want to jump in right now. 546-8200. Two questions we pose to you, the listening audience, today. First, who is your impact transfer? And so far, our number one, the debate mostly centering around wide receiver Brew McCoy, left tackle Gerald Mincy, and running back Lynn J. Dixon, which is, you know, a little bit interesting. I know I said McCoy, you said Mincy, Bear, but for a team that is probably going to be defined, you know, we know the offense, we probably know what we're going to get there, probably going to be pretty good offensively, but defense is where the improvement has to be made if the record is to improve, and nobody's really going with any of those defensive backs, Turrentine and Walker. I guess there's just more of the element of unknown with both of those guys.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I'll admit it, I'm just not that familiar with them. I know it's definitely, I mean, that's the thing. These are all positions of need, and if we're wanting to get where we're all wanting to go this year, we have all these guys have to hit, because it's so critical, Butch, to get our, you know, the back end of our defense shored up in the secondary, and that left tackle position, running back, and then wide receiver, you know, a bookend for Tillman and what sounds like Squirrel White. If you got three, it really puts defenses in a very, very tough position. You got three guys that can really play.
Yeah, that's another thought. If McCoy can't get eligible, or he's not in great shape, or, you know, what, something happens there, all the stuff we're hearing about Squirrel White, I wonder if they don't take a look at moving Hyatt outside into the Javonte Payton role and just going with Squirrel White, assuming he could pick up the offense in the slot.
I mean,
he just seems like the kind of guy you got to get on the field, you know?
Which one? I'm sorry, I was taking a call.
Squirrel.
Squirrel, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Heupel showed that last year. He's going to put the guys on the field that make plays. And you saw that, what, after the Florida game when he really settled in on Velus, Tillman, and Payton.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Hooker kind of went to a whole nother level after that. And you got three receivers that are playing at the level those guys played at last year. I mean, dude, we got deep on Alabama more than once. I'm not into moral victories, Russell.
Okay. Hey, real quick, before we get back to these phones,
yeah.
There's a video. There are a couple of really good videos for if you're a football junkie on YouTube right now. There's one where our guy Matt Wyatt, who we need to get on the show, down from Mississippi State, does like an hour-long dive into Heupel's offense. Wasn't that awesome?
Yeah, it was incredible. That's where, you know, and what really struck me was he's not reviewing the tape from, like, Vanderbilt or, no offense, Kentucky or, you know, some Division II school. I mean, the film we're breaking down is Tennessee at Alabama. Just smoking their secondary.
Well, I can't remember if it was Wyatt's video or there's another one. It's a little shorter. It's like 15 minutes, kind of just diving into the Heupel offense, where they look at – it was one of Tillman's long touchdowns against Bama, where he just goes right down the sideline. And it was a tempo touchdown because – they were still trying to get lined up. Bama was trying to get lined up, and we're up there with like 32 seconds on the play clock getting ready to go. And I didn't notice this during the game. I didn't see it in highlights. I didn't notice it until I watched it the other night on YouTube. But go back and find this. The Alabama corner that's lined up on Tillman, when the ball is snapped, he's got his back – he's literally looking away from the line of scrimmage. He's not like sideways or it's almost like he's trying to guard him backwards or something. It's like he's a wide receiver getting set to run the route and Tillman just runs right by him.
Yeah, no, I know the play you're talking about. Yeah, I watched that. He had several videos he put out on Twitter, you know, like shorter versions of it. And then I've watched the long one, but yeah, it's really fun to watch. So.
And then the other question this afternoon, who is Tennessee's biggest competition for second place in the SEC East? Over 100 votes cast at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. 57% of the audience says Kentucky. 36% say Florida. Only 7% say South Carolina. So Kentucky getting the respect from Vol Nation. Speaking of the Mildcats, let's get TJ, the Kentucky fan, in here next. Good afternoon, TJ. You're on the drive. It's Fan Run Radio.
How's it going, fellas?
Hey, it's going well. Thanks.
Hey, good. Hey, real quick, for those that may have or have not donated to the Kentucky Relief, just an update. You know, it's crazy because they're using high school gyms up there as shelters for people who have been displaced from their homes. But I mean, even today there were people from Knoxville go up there and help. I mean, Indiana, it's crazy when a bad thing happens. It takes a bad thing happen to sometimes make you realize that you got to take care of your neighbor. You know, in one of the towns in Kentucky, the highest crest ever for floods was 14 feet. Well, this one was 21 and a half feet. So it's kind of hard to put that into thought, but that's just how bad it was up there. So once again, appreciate you. Appreciate everybody who's donated and thoughts and prayers and all that stuff. So thank you.
Hey, God bless, man. Hope things settle down up there. I know it's been a really, really rough week.
Yeah, it definitely has. Real quick, you know, it's crazy. I literally picked up the phone and started listening to the show and called in as soon as you started talking about the Kentucky-Gonzaga game. I think I've found a new fan base to take over as the most annoying for your fan base, and that's Gonzaga basketball fans. It's kind of crazy because I don't know if you guys know, but when the Tornadoes hit Western Kentucky, Mark Few and Coach Cal are actually like best friends, kind of like Rick Barnes type thing. Really good friends, really close. But I have a different outlook on it, of course. Maybe Gonzaga wanted to play there so they can get more people in instead of only having 6,000 people, because I'm not being self-conceited or arrogant, but when you have a big game like that where you're probably both teams are going to be top 5 or top 10 at that time, wouldn't you want 12,000 fans and not 6,000 fans? Just my opinion.
Well, I mean, when you pack 6,000 people inside a really small building, like, it's louder. I've been in some gyms where it's less than 10,000 people. I mean, Auburn is probably a pretty good example, right? Auburn probably has the loudest gym in the SEC right now, and it's about a 10,000 seat place, whereas Rupp, it's got, what, 24,000? Thompson Bowling's got 21,000 now. They're not as loud. So a lot of it has to do with acoustics, how many people you can fit in there, noise bouncing around, and all that stuff. And to me, if it's a home and home, then Gonzaga should be able to play wherever they want to play. I mean, you're Big Bad Kentucky. What are you scared of? Go play them at home at their place.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I think it was a bad look on Cal for saying that. If I'm Cal, I say, hey, we'll play you wherever you want to play. I'll play you in Afghanistan. I don't care. You set the date, the time, the place. We'll play you. I think, you know, I think he's going to take a hit for that. But real quick, in football, you guys run the new offense with Heupel. Great offense. Spread them out. Throw it everywhere. Kind of reminds me of the team that Kentucky had with Mike Leach. Back in the day when he first started with, I think that was Tim Couch. Maybe it was Jared Lorenzen. We lost a lot, yeah, but we had fun losing because we put up some points. So is it the same offense as that, or is it kind of a different type of air raid? Because I haven't studied it. I know you were just talking about videos on it. Is it kind of the same concept, or is it completely different from the air raid?
Well, I'm no coach, but I think it's similar but different. I mean, you're in the gun, the wide splits with the wide receivers way outside near the sidelines to spread out the defense. But I think Tennessee will run more deep routes, deep passing patterns than Kentucky did back in the day, or Mississippi State does today. And then the tempo is the big thing, is just how fast they go, which I don't think Kentucky was doing it like that back in the day, and State doesn't do it like that. So similar concepts, but minor differences. It's a unique thing that Heupel's kind of developed over the years through several different stops. And they incorporate, particularly in the run game, a lot of the Baylor stuff that Art Briles was doing with some of the running stuff that they do. So some similarities, but some differences too.
Sounds good, man. Hey, you guys have a good night.
Thanks, DJ. You too, man. Have a good weekend. Let's get Jamie in here. Then we got a break and get Lucas Widespread Panzeca in the mix with us. Jamie, you're up next. Fan Run Radio. What's up, man?
Russ, if you think about it, tweet out the link to that that Heupel video. Think about it.
Okay.
Or
yeah,
Bear.
I will.
It sounds interesting to dig into. Guys, are y'all at all concerned about the lack of movement with Rodney Garner led defense? I know Banks is the coordinator, but it's Rodney Garner's the headliner over there.
How so? In recruiting, or
recruiting.
I don't have concern. I'm frustrated. You know, I mean, you wish you got Rodney Garner there. You wish you'd be getting a few more highly touted players, but you got to keep in mind the investigation. There's nothing they can do about it, and they're just getting killed with it still. I mean, rival recruiters and vultures in this league are telling players, you don't want to go there. They don't have a full slot. I mean, look at the record and everything, and it's just hard. So the sooner they can get that behind them, the better. But I don't know. I mean, what can be done about it, Jamie?
I'm with you. It's I hope that's all it is, Russ, is because I'd hate for us to get that NCAA crap behind us and find out that these players aren't all wanting to come play on a defense. Well,
if they go 9-3 this year and the investigation ends at the end of the year and we're sitting here having the same conversation a year from now, why aren't elite defensive linemen coming to play for Rodney Garner, then yeah, that would be very disappointing. But until then, I think that's what it is, man. I think just all the turmoil, all the drama, and the NCAA stuff is just killing them right now when it comes to landing, not just on defense, but just recruiting in general.
I hope you're right. I hope it's not because of the style, because I love our style, man. I just hope that it's not turned into a negative for the defensive prospects.
Sure.
I hope I'm wrong, man, because if we are able to recruit on defense like we're seeming able to do on offense, I mean, we can, you know, jet right past getting past Missouri and South Carolina and start really talking about doing something, you know, in my mind. And, you know, and I'm the constant pessimist, and I'm telling you right now, you get some of those guys back on the defensive line that we used to get, and, man, the problems start solving themselves. So let's just hope that that's not the case, and let's get this thing behind us. And, yeah, prayers out for the people in Kentucky. Good hell, man. That's crazy what's going on up there. Y'all hang in there.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate the phone call. We got to take a quick break right here. We're going to go out to the Mid-State and get our guy Lucas Panzeca from 104.5 The Zone in here. When we continue, we'll get his thoughts on Tennessee football and our smoking hot questions today. We'll also pick his brain a little bit about my Titans as preseason camp continues in Nashville. Stay with us. The Drive Fan Run Radio live this afternoon at National RX in Farragut. We're back with more right after this.
The Drive.
Fan Radio, The Drive continues. 105.7 FM, 1340 AM, streaming live at fanrunradio.com and your free Fan Run app. It's Russell, it's Bear, it's Marcus, it's you. And go now to our good friend Lucas Panzeca, 104.5 the Zone in Nashville. Damn it, Lucas, I did it again. Lucas, how are you, sir?
That's all good, Russell. I think we had a pretty solid streak going there, but it does get confusing. And you know what? The phone numbers are like one digit apart too. So the amount of phone calls that I get and that I imagine they get that are intended for different stations, it happens on a weekly basis.
Have you ever seen the guy, you know who Craig Carton is up in New York City?
Is that the guy that that asked Zach Wilson about his hot mom like the day after he was drafted?
Probably. He went to prison for a gambling thing. And anyway, really talented radio guy at WFAN in New York.
The Fan, and, right? Yep.
Yeah. And so they have like there's WFAN and then there's the ESPN affiliate with Michael Kay's show. It's New York City, you know, I mean, high stakes radio. Right. And they will get guys. He will take calls like people who are trying to call Mike Francesa or the Michael Kay show, and he'll just put them on and talk to him. He'll put them on the air and take those calls that you're getting for the other station. They'll just put them on and pretend like they're, and they'll ask him like, oh, what do you think about that other show, that Craig Carton show? Isn't that guy a moron? Absolutely hysterical.
We need to take that approach. I'll do that. And I'll ask him. I was talking to Retro at Titans practice this morning. I'll take that approach.
You should just put those callers on the air. And tell your program director, I said it was a good idea. I'm sure it'll go over very well. Lucas Panzeca of The Zone. Good to hear you, my friend. Football is back. Now, you guys are in an NFL city, so you follow the NFL a lot closer probably than some of us do. Do you watch the Hall of Fame game last night?
Yeah, we were talking about that right off the top of the show today. I am sick, so I do not watch the entirety of the Hall of Fame game. I remember last year, the Steelers were playing someone last year, and I was watching like into the third quarter, and I heard Joe Buck and Troy Aikman talking about the Steelers punter, and it was like, you know what, so-and-so has really been the MVP of the night, and I was like, all right, I got to get out of here. But last night I watched like the first three or four drives, watched a few carries by Josh Jacobs, watched the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, Trayvon Walker, register a sack, and then I checked out.
Yeah, it's one of those things. You get excited for it. Yay, football's back. And then you get into it, and you're like, wait a minute. I guess you could call this football. I don't know. Maybe it's not football. It's something close to football, looks like football, smells like football, but it's not quite football, Lucas. I don't care what they say.
It is strictly to hear Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth voice and hear the NBC football theme and watch maybe a few plays.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about the college game. I know you're excited for that. Will you get to come up to Knoxville for any UT games this year?
Yeah, I've got my eye on Florida week. The Titans bye week is always the best time to do that because I'm always at those games. But they're playing Alabama this time around during the bye week. Last year was Ole Miss. That worked out pretty well. I was up there for it. But I will. That is my only vacation time for the rest of the year. So I will be in Puerto Rico during the Alabama game, which is okay because typically I strategically avoid that game. Last year I bought Chris Stapleton tickets on the night of the Alabama game, and he decided to get laryngitis, so I had to watch the game anyway. But I've got my eyes on the Florida game, and that's what I'm hoping to check in for.
Are you hearing this, Bear? Our guy is taking the Russell Smith nature hike approach.
Turning it up to 11.
For Alabama now.
Yeah.
He's just not going. He's like, I'm going to go find something fun to do.
Yeah. He sounds like he's in a healthier place than us.
I can't blame him.
I got to, like, 2 years ago, I had a Gatlinburg trip, and we were in the mountains, you know, just a few friends, and it was perfect because it was on Alabama weekend, and Jeremy Pruitt's still the coach. So, and then last year was the Stapleton. I did still have to watch it because the concert got postponed, which turned out to be a good game for three quarters. But I think Alabama, hey, that was a rebuilding Alabama team, Russ. So I don't want to know what a 2022 version of the Crimson Tide is going to look like. I think they're far and away the best team in college football this season. And maybe it could be interesting for a quarter or two, but I think I'll be in a healthier place on vacation on the beach.
Well, I think most Tennessee fans are, you kind of take the Georgia and the Alabama games and you just sort of set them aside, right, Lucas? I mean, we'll watch,
yes.
We'll hope for the best. And if you win, you party all night long. If you lose, hey, Tennessee's just not there yet, and that's not Josh Heupel's fault. It's not Danny White's fault. It's certainly not the fans' fault. It's just sort of is what it is, those things. But from my vantage point, every other game on the schedule, Lucas Panseca, is winnable. Now, I'm not saying they're going 10-2, but every other game on the schedule, we could talk about Tennessee winning at LSU. We can talk about them beating Florida, Pitt. Anybody else on that schedule, like, there's no reason Tennessee can't win those games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They're all winnable. I mean, you look at every single one of those games, and you can envision Tennessee coming out of those games on top. You're right. Like, the ball will bounce certain ways. A call will go this way or that way, and they probably won't win all those games and go 10-2, but they are all winnable. And when I look at the Florida game that early on, like, I don't have to talk to you guys in your audience about how that just seems to be a tone setter every single year. Tennessee has got to beat Florida this year. They have to beat Florida this year. It's happened too often since the Urban Meyer era that Florida, who low-key has had almost as much coaching turnover as Tennessee has in the last 15 years or so, I guess 12 years since Urban Meyer was there, every time Florida and the coaching tenure in Gainesville just has everything collapse under it like a house of cards, Tennessee is just kind of off to the side having its own issues, right? Like, they've never been able to take advantage of that. Never were able to take advantage of the Will Muschamp era going to hell, of Dan Mullen of last season just completely collapsing under him. That happened after Florida beat Tennessee in Gainesville. Well, now you're in a spot where it's a stable situation for Tennessee. You return like 77% of production across the board, offense, defense, and special teams. And here's Florida, who has no idea who they're going to throw the ball to. They have a dynamic athlete at quarterback, but hasn't really proven himself quite yet. They're going to have to win ugly. They're very thin at a lot of positions, and that game's in Knoxville. I feel like we're going to be thinking, it's all been sunshine and rainbows to this point in the Heupel era. A loss to Florida would probably change that way of thinking a little bit, and it always just seems to set the season on a certain trajectory, and Tennessee absolutely has to take advantage of that turnover in Florida and beat them this year.
Lucas Panseca, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville with us this afternoon on The Drive. And Lucas, we're asking a Rickard Ridge Barbecue smoking hot question today to our audience. The team in the East that worries you most other than Georgia. Now, you just talked about Florida, and trust old guys like me and Bear, we feel you. The Florida game has us shook after watching this series play out for over 30 years now. But Kentucky is picked to finish second in the East down at SEC Media Days a couple of weeks ago. You got a lot of hype around South Carolina, Shane Beamer, Spencer Rattler coming into the season. What's your take on this? Who has got you most worried other than Georgia in the SEC East this year?
You know what? For me, it's South Carolina. And maybe I'm conditioned to feel this way. I was joking about it on the air last year on Kentucky Week. I love Kentucky. I love Kentucky football because for all these years that Tennessee has just been down and it's been dreadful and depressing each and every week, seemingly Kentucky's just always there. I mean, save for 3 years in my lifetime, they're always there for us. Even in their best seasons, when we're going 5-7 in year one of Jeremy Pruitt and Kentucky's a 10-win football team, they were there for us. And we were up 24-0 at the start of the fourth quarter. So I love Kentucky football. It's hard for me to look at them and feel a level of concern about playing the Wildcats, especially in Neyland Stadium, and also just the matchup. Kentucky's going to be a good football team this year. They return he's the best returning running back in the SEC this year. Probably won't be the best running back in the league. That probably goes to Jahmyr Gibbs at Alabama. A lot of hype around Will Levis. They're going to be stout on defense. They'll have continuity on offense despite replacing their play caller. I like what they're doing there. And they'll be a little more balanced throwing the football around. It's not just everything going through Wandale Robinson. They've got some more bodies there and a little bit more balance in the receiver room. But at the same time, it's just the matchup and the playing styles, and I think that favors Tennessee, and they have them at home. But when I look at South Carolina, they surprised everybody last year, and Spencer Rattler is a total wild card. I love what they did in the offseason. Marshawn Lloyd, who we all kind of forgot about, went down early last season, really highly recruited player at running back. He's healthy for them this year. I really like what South Carolina has in 2022, and that game's in Columbia. Maybe this is just me being conditioned to always look at Kentucky as that soft, cushy pillow that Tennessee can sort of fall on when things are bad. But for me, it's South Carolina and the East, Russ.
I like the generational gap here, too, Barry. Old guys like us, Florida, very, very scary series just because of all the losses. Younger guy like Lucas, he's seen Tennessee lose to South Carolina a couple of times. He doesn't take that for granted, but no matter what generation you're from, all Vol fans love seeing Kentucky when they come out there on that field. They're there for us. I mean, like Lucas said, it's just automatic, baby.
I love Kentucky football.
Lucas Panseca with us. All right, Lucas, let's switch gears a little bit. Tell me about the Titans. I see some similarities here just in preseason question marks. Tennessee offensive line, who's going to be left tackle? What are they going to do about that secondary? I'm looking at the Titans. Who's going to be that left guard? Who's going to play right tackle? Who's going to play on the corner in the secondary for the Titans? Are we seeing any answers to those questions for Mike Vrabel's squad yet?
Yeah, I think you can go ahead and pencil in Dylan Raiden at right tackle and Aaron Brewer at left guard. Early indications, a week and a half into training camp. Haven't even played a preseason game yet, but that's where things are trending. I think it's their job to lose at the moment. And as far as the secondary goes, you know what bodies are going to be there, especially at corner. Like, you know it's Christian Fulton and Caleb Farley and Roger McCreary, the rookie out of Auburn. He's had a great camp. You know who the role players are going to be, but how's that all going to sort of stack up? And they're so, so young at defensive back. Like, Kevin Byard is the old man of the group, and I don't even think he's 30 years old yet. And Buster Skrine, an 11-year veteran, was added midseason last year. UTC product, really did a good job for this team last year. And he was just going to be an important veteran depth piece going into training camp. He retires kind of abruptly at the start of training camp. So there you are with everybody in the cornerback room, and not a single one of them is above the age of 23. Not a single one of them has been in the NFL for more than 3 years. So a lot more is going to be on the shoulders of Christian Fulton, who really showed flashes last year, but he's always had that veteran presence to lean on. That's not really the case this year. Caleb Farley's had a fantastic camp. He joined the show today. He's just speaking more confidently than he was last year. He doesn't have any inhibitions. He's not being held back by an ACL or a shoulder or a back or all the things that have plagued him over the last 2 to 3 years. He's a full go. So it's an interesting sort of juxtaposition because they're all healthy. They've all looked good in camp. Christian Fulton has had a couple of moments, but for the most part, you haven't really noticed him, which I suppose is a good thing for a corner. But the question is the lack of experience. How do we see that come back to bite them, if at all? But unlike Tennessee, I think you know who the guys are going to be in the defensive backfield for the Titans. For the Vols, it's interesting because I don't have no idea who starts at corner. I mean, is Kamal Haddon going to kind of grab one of those roles by the horns? Can you trust Brandon Turnage? Can Warren Burrell kind of finally take that step and be really consistent as a cover corner? I mean, if the picture of the defensive backfield is going to look like what we saw in the Music City Bowl, there's a lot of cause for concern. And most of those bodies are the same without Theo Jackson, who's now a Tennessee Titan, and adding the two transfers, the two national products from Georgia Tech and from Ohio State. I just don't know how all those pieces kind of fit in, Russ.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out for both the Vols and the Titans as we visit with Lucas this afternoon. What about rookies out there? Any impact rookies that we can be looking at this year besides the obvious?
Well, Traylon Burks. You say the obvious. That's Traylon Burks. And he's had a good camp. Had a drop today kind of over the middle where he had beat Caleb Farley on a route between the hash marks and had to climb the ladder for it a little bit, bobbled it and dropped it. That's probably the only negative moment he's had throughout camp. But as far as the other rookies go, look at these pass catchers, and you see Kyle Phillips, who's gotten a lot more reps with the ones recently. I think he's going to be this team's starter at punt returner. And Chigakonkwo, who is starting to develop a connection with Ryan Tannehill, a dynamic player at tight end who has Austin Hooper to lean on as a veteran presence. So Kyle Phillips, to me, is going to play a ton of snaps for the Titans in the slot this year. He's a plug-and-play guy. And Roger McCreary, like I said, he's really, really had a good camp. I mean, coaches speak glowingly about him. Defensive coordinator Shane Bowen the other day said he's not a rookie. He's just not a rookie. He doesn't play like a rookie, talk like a rookie, act like a rookie. And that's really high praise from a coaching staff that typically doesn't dish out those types of compliments, especially when Mike Vrabel is talking. So when you look at those three guys and the rest of this rookie class as a whole, they're all available. Like, that's the biggest thing. It feels like every year in the Mike Vrabel, John Robinson era, the Titans are slow playing these guys. Last year was Caleb Farley. The year before that, I know Isaiah Wilson's a whole other thing in and of itself. Even in 2019, like A.J. Brown was nursing something in his training camp of his rookie year. Jeffrey Simmons was coming off an ACL tear. They knew they weren't going to have him until October. But this year, everybody's available and everybody's kind of flashing throughout training camp. And that's a good thing because they're going to need those guys. You and I talked about the wide receiver room a couple of weeks ago, and you used the word pedestrian, which was totally fair because it's just a bunch of unproven faces outside of Robert Woods. But all of those guys are starting to kind of find their role, and I'm interested in this preseason game coming up on Thursday to watch Kyle Phillips and to watch Chigakonkwo and to watch Roger McCreary, how much he plays inside versus outside as they kind of settle in for the first time in a competitive environment.
I like it. I'm picking up major glass half full vibes from Lucas Panzeca on the Titans right now. So let me ask you this. You say you try to watch the Hall of Fame game, but not really. I totally get that. What about, you follow the Titans this closely, when the Titans kick it off against the Ravens in preseason action next week, Lucas, can you make it through that?
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to. But
contractually obligated
I'm literally obligated to, and you know, we're keeping up with every position battle down to the final spot, right? Like, we are looking at who gets that fifth or sixth wide receiver spot if they keep six receivers. Titans have three quarterbacks that are going to be on the 53-man roster. Malik Willis is not ready to be called upon if Ryan Tannehill goes down. Logan Woodside's still that guy, but you spend a third-round pick on him. You're not going to put him on the practice squad and wait for somebody else to swoop in and try to take advantage of that projected upside that it looks like Willis has. He's got a long way to go, but you want to protect him on the 53-man roster. That's not something Mike Vrabel's ever done as the head coach of the Titans, keeping three quarterbacks on the 53. That means somebody loses their job. And is it the wide receiver room? Because he has some flexibility. Now the tight end position, a couple of pass catchers there, that you didn't have the luxury of having last year with Austin Hooper and Chigakonkwo. I'm thinking the Titans keep five receivers, and I'm thinking Josh Malone, if they keep six, would be that sixth guy. And I know, you know, how familiar we all are with Josh Malone. He's had an okay camp. He was really good in the spring, but right now is when it matters. He had a nice grab today for his touchdown. I just don't know if he's doing enough to force his way into that five, because Racy McMath is out there catching bombs at 6'3", 220, and turning into a deep threat in 11-on-11 in team drills. So that's where I'm really looking at in the preseason games in the fourth quarter, is who's making those plays near the end to grab those last couple of roster spots, because especially at a room like wide receiver, they're going to need all of those guys to contribute at some point.
All right, Lucas, last thing, we'll let you out of here. We've talked college football. We've talked the NFL. Now let's get down to the business that everybody cares about. Opening day in the Premier League today. I've not been keeping up with Arsenal at Crystal Palace, but everybody plays tomorrow or this weekend. What are your thoughts on it? Do Bears Man City boys continue their stranglehold League? Does Liverpool strike back this year, or is there another team that could come in and make a run of it in England?
Yeah, I don't see how Man City doesn't continue their stranglehold of the Premier League. Just adding Erling Haaland to that bunch, I just don't see how they don't win the league this year if they stay healthy. And then for me, it's as simple as City first, Liverpool second, and I could see a substantial gap between one and two. And then it's 3-4-5 between Chelsea, Tottenham, and Arsenal. And I lean Chelsea and Tottenham because of the managers, Russell, and because of the squad. I love the moves Arsenal made in the offseason. They're up 2-0 on Crystal Palace right now. But I just don't see it with Mikel Arteta. I haven't seen it yet. I love Thomas Tuchel as a manager. I love Antonio Conte, and I know you do too. Just a guy who he just wins. Everywhere he goes, he finds a way to win at least one competition at that respective club. So really it's 3-4-5. The Champions League race is going to be fascinating this year because of some of the pieces that were added to those three teams. And I know Chelsea still is looking to make some moves, but unfortunately 1-2 in the Premier League to me is all but decided. They haven't played a game yet.
Been watching the new All or Nothing on Prime with Arsenal. Have you watched those shows before?
I have not. I was talking to a coworker about that today. Like, there's too much content, Russell. Like, there's too many damn shows on Amazon and Netflix and HBO that I just can't keep up with, and I'm running out of time because the time to catch up on all that stuff are the summer months, and the Titans play a preseason game on Thursday, and Tennessee football starts up in like a month. I would love to. I need some more soccer content in my life.
Oh, man. It's very good. You would love it the most. Lucas of 104.5 The Zone in Nashville. Nailed it. Lucas, we love you, buddy. Thanks so much for jumping on.
Love you guys, too. Always look forward to it.
At Lucas Padzica on Twitter. He does a outstanding job with the Titans Radio Network and producing a couple of shows, being on the air over there in the Mid-State, 104.5 The Zone. Proud graduate of the fan-run School of Broadcasting, Lucas Panzica, one of our own, Bear.
That he is, one of our big triumphs. Great kid. He's not a kid anymore.
Take notes, Marcus. Could be you one day.
I mean, for real. You know he does like the live in-game updates for the Titans games on Titans Radio.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's big time.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll get to do that for Chelsea.
What's that?
Maybe that could be me for Chelsea, you know? Make even more proud.
Yeah, that's what they want as an American over there. Lucas, thank you so much. Thank you, Marcus. You hang right there. You can't go anywhere. Bear, you too. We got to take a quick timeout. Stay with us. Back to wrap up hour number two of the show right after this on Fan Run Radio. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues, wrapping up hour number two of the show. Russell, Bear, and Marcus back with you, taking your phone calls today at 865-546-8200. 546-8200, and Lucas Panzeca, an excellent appearance on the show today. Bear, what did you learn?
That I probably should have drank about another half a gallon of liquid today. I missed most of that, unfortunately.
Were you dehydrated or something?
Yeah, I got really dehydrated. Combination being real dehydrated, the new chair. But, like, I did that deal. I've done it before. I don't know if you remember. It's been a long time. Where, like, I get, like, almost full body cramps. I got them both hamstrings. One started in my stomach. And then when it started in my back started spasming. And I had to get out of here.
All right, that's really weird. Marcus, is he just making up an elaborate excuse for not paying attention to our visit with Lucas today on the show? Is that what's happening right now? Feels like that's what's happening.
So, obviously, I want to tell the truth, but boy, would that be good for the joke. No, he did have a bad cramp. And
he had a cramp?
Multiple.
Like it was multiple, yeah.
Multiple cramps. I'm dehydrated. This chair, you don't move around as much. As great as this chair is. Like, you don't move a whole lot, so I've been sitting here pretty much static for, like, 2 hours now. And, like, I don't know. I moved, and the next thing I knew, I had multiple issues going on.
Yeah, he had to take a lap, and I held onto the board just to make sure.
What are you, like, having to stretch him out or something? You stretch out the hammy?
I had to get out of the studio and get standing up straight, and then I had to walk. I had to go walk in the parking lot for a minute and chug water.
Oh, he downed like 2 water bottles like within minutes. It was crazy.
Russ is he's never seen it, Russ. I'm an aggressive water drinker.
It's good to know that even when I'm not there, Bear is still the weirdest person in Knoxville. 865-546-8200 if you want to chime in here this afternoon. Setting up a busy hour number 3 on the show today. We've got our What You Talk About Champions League draw. If you're just joining us, you missed the news. Matty Ice, 3-time What You Talk About champion, has been given a sponsor's exemption into the show, into the Champions League this year. So he is the 9th member. We have 9 winners. We will draw those. And here's how it works. We're going to have 3 contests of 3. So 3x3. And we will draw the first 3 coming up here in a little bit, the second 3, and then the third 3. So we'll have 1 round Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then the winners of those 3 rounds will combine for 1 final championship round on Thursday next week right here on The Drive. So we will crown our champion next Thursday here on Fan Run Radio. If you've been enjoying What You Talk About, you're going to want to be tuning in to the 5 o'clock hour next week, and you're going to want to stay tuned for our 5 o'clock hour today because we will find out who is facing who. And how everything's going to shake out next week should be a lot of fun. All right, setting up a big third hour this afternoon on the show. We're going to reset today's hot questions. We got 2 of them for you if you're joining us. Question number 1, who is your impact transfer of the year? Your pick to click from the transfer portal for the Tennessee Volunteers this season. Had some good back and forth on that here in the first 2 hours. We'll reset that for you coming up here in hour number 2. And then our second question of the day concerns Tennessee's place in the SEC East. And who do you view as Tennessee's chief competition for second in the East if we're conceding that Georgia is most likely going to win the East this year and is one of the better teams in all of college football? It's Tennessee, Kentucky, Florida, South Carolina, all sort of jumbled in there. I don't think people think Mizzou is ready for this. Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt. Those 4 teams, who is Tennessee's biggest competition there for second place in the East? 164 votes cast at Fox Sports Knox on Twitter. 57% of the audience says Kentucky. So I'm still with Bear. I'm still with Bear. I've seen too many bad Florida teams beat too many good Tennessee teams through the years, and I've seen too many not-so-great Tennessee teams beat Kentucky teams that are supposed to be amongst the best in school history. So I just have, even though on paper, yes, I will fully admit, Kentucky is better than Florida this year. They should be. I'm still more worried about the Florida game. And maybe that's just superstition. That's just history playing into it. Maybe we should not look at that, but I mean,
it's the same thing with Kentucky and Florida. They like whatever mojo we have over them and Florida has over us. It doesn't work Florida to Kentucky in football. Like, they don't care. They play them off their feet almost every time.
Well, we play them off. They still lose. I mean, I don't think they've beaten Florida any more than they've beaten Tennessee. Remember that year they beat them down there in the swamp 3 or 4 years ago, and that ended like a 30-year losing streak.
Yeah, you're right, and that just cements it for me. I mean, why are we even talking about Kentucky? They're trash. They always have been, always will be. End of discussion.
Hour number three of the drive coming up. More Fan Run Radio. Lucas has your top five at five up next.